Hey, how's it going? It's Jack Osborne. You are listening to The Diary of a Madman with Dan and Josh. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Diary of the Madman, the ultimate Ozzy Osbourne podcast, where we geek out about all things Ozzy and all things Ozzy related. I am Josh Kramer. With me, as always, is Mr. Dan Drago. How's it going, Dan?
I am doing great, Josh. How you doing today? I'm super excited for today's episode.
Doing great, man. Super excited. And as the listeners who are watching can see, we have a third with us today. Do you care to introduce this fellow to us?
Yeah, absolutely. Today, I am super excited to announce Mr. Martin Popoff with us today. Martin has been generous to come on, and I'm super excited. I've been an admirer and a fan of Martin since the 90s when he did the Brave Words and Bloody Knuckles magazine, which to me was the premier magazine in the 90s and 2000s. There was nothing that even came close, to be honest. And you know, Martin was generous enough to review one of my band's albums back then, and we put it on Knuckle Dusters, which was the little single back then.
Knuckle
right,
Tracks. Martin? Knuckle Tracks.
Knuckle Tracks. I did the same thing. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's so funny. Yeah, you know, I'll be honest, I'm a huge fan of Martin. I own probably 40 books by Martin. If there is someone that I think is the go-to guy on hard rock and metal as an author, it is Martin Popoff. He's written books about Rush, AC/DC, Megadeth. I forgot to mention this earlier, too. Some of my favorite books you ever wrote, Martin, were the like top 500 metal albums, the top songs lists. I have all of those books still, and I'm sure they're all out of print now, but you're so prolific and you keep releasing new books all the time. You also do History in Five Songs as a podcaster, and you do Sea of Tranquility with Pete Bardo, and you also are doing a brand new podcast called AC/DC. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's called Kicked in the Teeth, doing that with John Gaffney. So he had a Black Sabbath one before. I've been on his channel many times, Lair of the Alchemist. And he just came up with the idea. He wanted to start this. And I said, well, let's get hooked up with my podcast company, Pantheon. And so we quickly put it over there. So we've only done three episodes. We're going to go in reverse order of, earliest album first. We're going to go through the albums, but it's only going to be every second episode like that. And in between, we're going to do like a conceptual one. We've got all these cool ideas. The first one was let's analyze the AC/DC album openers of every album. So we've done that. We've done three of those, and History in Five Songs. I've been there for a long time.
Yeah.
We've got 253 episodes so far. Haven't missed a week. Just plowing away at that.
So with the history of history and songs, your latest
episode, Dan, 250. Dan, did you hear that? 253 episodes and hasn't missed a week. I mean, you can learn something from this cat right here, right?
Sure. We're so sporadic here, unfortunately, and it's mostly my fault. I'll admit it. So your latest episode is about the Police and New Wave. Can you talk a little bit about your latest episode?
Yeah, so it's called A Joke About the Police, and I've got this buddy, Ed Whitmore. He's a top crime writer for TV over in the UK, and I used him in my Cure panel book. We've been doing these panel books where I assemble a bunch of people and we go through every studio album, and so he was in that. So he just emailed me one morning and said, I thought this was funny, and he sent me this joke that was like, what's the definition of a wanker? it's someone whose favorite new wave band is the Police.
Which got my
back up a little bit, because I thought, well, you know, that you could say they're the greatest new wave band of all time. And then of course that gets into, there's a lot of great competition, and it gets into the idea about art. You know, what kind of aesthetic do you like? Are they too bouncy and are they too successful to be your favorite, right? Are you a music snob where it's got to be a rare band, right? So we got into this big back and forth. And then that went into the definition of abstract versus subjective, and what is new wave? What is post-punk? What does new wave mean in UK? What does it mean in the US? Not that I had him on the episode. I have no guests ever. So it was just me reading off his emails and riffing back and forth about this whole thing, right? So because I just get on and blab. It's just a solo show. So yeah, that was a fun episode.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I'm a huge Police fan. Absolutely huge. I think they have maybe the straight best five records next to maybe Sabbath and Beatles of all time. It's a great run. I don't think they have any weakness. I think Sting is a brilliant songwriter, but more importantly, I think Stuart Copeland and Andy Summers make the band, because without them, it's just not the same. It's just amazing how sometimes artists, can continue, you know, because Sting wrote most of that material, but it's just not the same with those two. And it's just amazing how that works. So do you have bands like to me, Joy Division is a little bit more post-punk in the UK. But what about Men at Work? Do you have any Men at Work in there?
Yeah, I didn't put Men at Work in. You know, we were, I guess, tunnel visioned on US bands and UK bands. Okay. You know, the big winners, I think, for both of us were the likes of, Joy Division. But for me, I said I'd put XTC really high. We put Magazine really high. We both put The Jam really high. He mentioned a few that I'm not a fan of at all, like The Specials. I don't like The Talking Heads either.
So there
isn't really much new wave from America that I like very much. I mean, Devo comes to mind, but Devo's even way down the list for me. So I'm a big Anglophile, right? So a lot of my favorites are those bands. But yeah, Men at Work I consider almost like too mainstream rock, conservative. They're just a rock band. It's almost like that situation when there's kind of money around calling a band in a certain genre. You kind of want to jump into that and be called part of it when really, you know, 2 years earlier, you would have just been another rock band out there, right?
Oh, that's a great point. I would recommend listen to some deep tracks. If songs called No Restrictions, Down by the Sea, they're actually very talented musicians, and I can't speak enough about them. I know they're known for Down Under and Overkill, which are great, but they're actually very, very good. They're an excellent band. Great live, too. So definitely check them out.
Yeah. Well, I grew up through all that stuff. I got my fill of Men at Work, believe me. They were the mania, man. They were the thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love the topic you brought up today. Before we get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame real quick, Josh. So today's topic is ranking the 90s albums from Ozzy, Dio, and Black Sabbath. We're going to rank them all. You know, I love Martin is a great reviewer. He has so many books where he just gives, you know, rankings of albums, and you know, to me, you're the expert on this, Martin. So how'd you come up with the idea?
Well, just Pete and I were for Sea of Tranquility, Pete Pardo, we were just batting around ideas, and I just had this idea more or less off the top of my head where it's actually very similar to this idea. And it was the first one that kicked off a whole bunch of these, but I just said, why don't we mash together just the Ozzy, Dio, and Sabbath in the 80s, and we rank those. Oh, but now we've done the Thrash Big Four in the 80s. We've done Aerosmith, Ted Nugent, Blue Oyster Cult, Kiss in the 70s. We've done the last one was just the second wave American bands. So we mashed together the catalogs of Angels, Stars, Gods. Who else was in there? Legs, Diamond, Riot, all together. The second one was a big hit one. That was Zeppelin, Sabbath, Heap, and Deep Purple in the 70s, all mashed together. So we've fallen into it. It's been easy, but we've been encouraged because it's been some of, you know, really good numbers in the last little while. So we've done like six of these, and we're probably not going to stop for another three or four or five. So we got more to do. So, well, so when you asked me to do this, I had this on the brain. It's like, oh, well, how do we do this? So I thought, you know, pick something you guys probably haven't done already.
Right.
And so I was pretty confident it was that. So.
Well, and then like we say, we're all things Aussie and all things Aussie related. And this does relate. You know, before we get too much further into this, I do want to say, Martin, Dan is not overselling himself when he says he's read 40 of your books. That guy reads constantly every day.
Right.
And can we record a podcast? He's like, I don't know, man, I'm busy. Then he'll say, I read 3 books this week. And I'm like, what the shit? But before we get too far into it, we do want to acknowledge this one that Dan and I refer to affectionately as the Bible is yours. And we have always encouraged listeners, if they can find a copy of this somewhere, it is out of print, correct? But you can find maybe a used copy on eBay or something. We reference this almost every episode. So thank you so much for that. It's like an Ozzy Osbourne Day by Day. And we love this. This is our favorite of all of them. So thank you for helping us so much. Without even realizing.
Yeah, I've fallen into that habit of doing a lot of those kinds of books. Like for my UK publisher, I've now done probably 7 or 8 of those.
The timeline books
where it's the detailed timeline. I've even done a thrash trilogy, a new wave of British heavy metal too. So I've got time. Yeah. So I've got timelines with quotes, and I've got a lot of timeline books that don't even have the quotes. Right. So we've done lots and lots of these, and the Aussie was one of the first, and the Maiden is just like that one, actually for the same publisher too.
Yeah, it's a great one too. Yeah, I was telling you when that book came out, you'd referenced a 99 unreleased album called I Did It All Because of You. And you even have the track listing on there, that what it was supposed to be. And I haven't really seen that anywhere outside your book. So the nuggets.
Well, it's probably not even true then. You know, it's probably a rumor. It could have even been maliciously made up. It could be something that just came and went. Who knows, right? And it could be even half right, right? It could be more like someone had this title and it lived as a title for 3 hours. Maybe there's only 5 songs instead of whatever I said there was. So who knows, right?
But I'll tell you this, you're eerily accurate on the song titles. Being an Aussie guru and Josh being an Aussie, you know, scholar here, you know, the song titles you reference, I could even tell you like when they were written. They're all unreleased, but I know I've heard of the song titles over the years. So that is actually accurate, which gives a lot of credence to the idea.
Yeah, they're accurate. Cool.
Yeah. So the one thing I got to bug you on is you have to write an album by album on Ozzy. I know you haven't done that one yet. You did do one on Black Sabbath, guys. So if you've not heard, not read Martin's album called Martin's book called Sabotaged, it's an album by album Black Sabbath in the 70s. And then I forget the title. You also have one in the 80s too, Martin. What's that one called?
Born Again, 80s and 90s.
Yeah, 80s and 90s. I have them both readily available. I use them a lot as reference material too. So excellent books. But that, I'd love to see one on Ozzy like that.
Yeah, so, I've thought about it. I've sort of formulated it together a little bit. We'll see. It might happen. It might happen. And it might even only be just an 80s one. I might have enough material. So I've got a lot of good interview stuff. I mean, frankly, though, a lot of the interview stuff is just going to be re-putting those quotes from the old book back in print, too, right?
Right. Well, that's what you do with Sabotage, because it's originally called Tune Let Loose, right? Yeah, exactly. I would have to say, if you did a 90s, you'd almost have to do a 90s and two, you know, maybe 90s and beyond, because you only released 2 records in the 90s. It just isn't even worth it, you know. Yeah. So, all right, Josh, we got big news this week.
Yes. So before we get into this week's topic, massive news in the world of Ozzy. Our man Ozzy, after 2 years of Dan and I doing this show and bitching constantly that he's never really even mentioned for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, not only got his nomination, but has officially had the induction announcement. So Ozzy Osbourne will be inducted into the 2024 class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Finally. Yeah. So tell us, Martin, what's your initial thoughts on Ozzy in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And do you think he's deserving of the induction?
I think that makes total sense. I have written for Goldmine Magazine over the years, some of these articles where I've like laid out why, you know, you put on your Hall of Fame hat and you go, okay, these are the reasons why these bands should get in. I've done those for Deep Purple, Judas Priest, and Yes, for sure. I might have done one for Rush even before they were in. And it's a nice little encapsulation of why. And if I was to think of one for Ozzy, it would be things like he's got the big, you know, long storied history with Sabbath for 10 years. He's got this major success all through the 80s, toured all through the 80s, big band, you know, big support acts that went on to be big bands as well. He's always in the news. He would do interviews. People like Ozzy. He's just a personable, down-to-earth guy. He's one of the few people who persevered through the 90s and still maintained his success you know, this was a real down period for metal. And Ozzy's making basically traditional, right down the middle, heavy metal, right? So, you know, he's there having success along with the likes of AC/DC and Metallica and Pantera, but Ozzy's there. He keeps making records, which is cool. You know, he had 2 records recently, which is great. He kept touring, so he sold lots and lots and lots of tickets over his years, right? You know, even when there weren't records out and he wasn't so much in the news, he was still running around, you know, touring and selling a lot of tickets. So I think that's important. So everybody knows Ozzy. He had the Osbourne show. He's got his health issues recently, but as long as he could, he would continue to tour. As long as he could, he would continue to do interviews, although the interviews, you know, started going down even before I think the quitting touring started going down, right?
Definitely. Yeah, I think those are all great points. That
topic, Ozfest, you know, he did Ozfest for a decade, right? And you're looking at the, you know, where a traveling tour named after him and his namesake. That's a huge, you know,
That's massive. Yeah. It's innovative. Mm-hmm. So that's a new thing. So it's an industry thing. And, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a celebration of the industry. So you should celebrate Ozfest too. That's a great point, Josh. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think it's ironic that Ozzy made it in on his first attempt, where Sabbath took, what, 12 years, I think, of nominations, yeah. which is pretty amazing, to be honest. So yeah. I'm really excited about that, for sure, that he just made it. Yeah. I didn't think he was going to get in. I'll be honest. I was a little bit of a naysayer, thinking that they were going to make
it. I was the opposite. I knew it.
Yeah, Josh was very positive. So I got to give it up to you, Josh.
I've always felt like people didn't know that he wasn't in. He was in with Sabbath. So I think people assumed his solo career was in also. And I think once, generally, people realized, it's like, Ozzy Osbourne isn't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, that's crazy. I felt confident, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's a top 30 of all time on the RIAA. He's, and this is all in America, he has clearly outsold Black Sabbath here. He's much more popular as a solo artist. He did the Osbournes. He stayed relevant in the 90s. Ozfest was absolutely incredible. His last record in his 70s was Rock Album of the Year. I mean, I think that's really what put him over. It wasn't Hard Rock Album of the Year. It was Rock Album of the Year, which puts him in the same, you know, stratosphere of all of those great Stones, Beatles, all those great bands before him. So I think that was a huge factor as well. So I'm just so excited for the man.
Nice. Great.
All right. So here we go. We're going to start our topic. What we'll do is we'll do a quick introduction of every record, and then we'll go around and rank them from 9 to 1. So what we're going to talk about today is all records released in the 90s by Ozzy, Black Sabbath, and Dio. So real quick, we'll talk about them. The first one released in the 90s was this bad boy, Dio Lock Up the Wolves, which is a album with Rowan Robinson joining the band. Matter of fact, the whole band changed over from Dream Evil, the album before, when he did Lock Up the Wolves. I remember when this album came out, I was actually at a buddy's house and didn't have my car, and I had to walk 2 miles to pick up this very CD each way to go get it. That's how excited I was for a new Dio record. I am a big Dio fan. You know, we talk Ozzy, Ozzy, Ozzy all the time, and unfortunately, there's an Ozzy versus Dio thing that always goes on that I think is more exasperated by the fans than the actual guys. They had their fun stuff while they were in Black Sabbath and Ozzy solo, but I think they actually liked each other more than was let on. But what was your first interpretation of Lock Up the Wolves, Martin?
Well, I'll be ranking this one pretty low. I definitely don't like it much at all. I'm annoyed how slow it is, right? My whole theme throughout where my Dio rankings are here. I'm ranking most of these albums. These are going to be pretty low. But the problem with Dio is he just got into this mode where he wanted to make slow music. You know, I've heard a few of the guys try to articulate why, Craig Goldie, et cetera, over the years, where Ronnie just felt he can do more with his vocals and his lyrics over slow music. But this is so slow. It's slow, boring, dull. You know, I don't blame the new guitarist. He's 16 years. I blame them for hiring someone who's that young. Right?
Yeah.
Which is really weird. Right. I mean, it annoys me when they hire these people you go out and hear that somebody auditioned 500 people, 100 right. people or whatever. And so they get a lead singer in who's never written a song before or whatever. Right.
Like, right. What are they thinking?
Really right. You couldn't put that on the list of the requirements, you know? So yeah, it's weird. It's just strange that you would hire someone that young who's hasn't written a whole pile of songs. Right. But no, it's going to be definitely very low on my list because of this, this slow, boring thing that they do on it.
So I think actually, and I'll get to you in a second, Josh, but I think you bring up a great point. I personally think, and this is going to be blasphemy to some people, that Dio was always a little behind Ozzy's solo career. You know, he leaves Black Sabbath and does two fantastic records in Holy Diver and Last in Line, right? With a core band, kind of like Ozzy's Blizzard of Oz band, right? And then what happens in the 80s, Ozzy gets Zakk Wylde, a young American guy. And what does Dio do? He gets a young Rowan Robinson, another American. And I think he, you know, looks a lot like Zakk Wylde, actually. And I think he's just trying to, I think he always was trying to follow Ozzy's footsteps a little bit. Maybe not knowingly, but I think there's something there that he was like, well, Ozzy hit it big with Zakk Wylde. I'm going to try to do something similar and hire a young, you know, good looking, long haired, blonde American.
I'm going to agree with that. You know, when I listened back to this record on, it was Thursday, my initial thought was, this guy sounds like a Zakk Wylde prototype to me, like very similar in style. One thing that Martin said that I really agree with, though, I'm just not a fan of when Ronnie wants to do the slower music either, Martin. You couldn't have said that better. I agree 100%. Wild One is a track on here that I really liked, a little more of an up-tempo rocker. That's definitely more his house for me personally. That's what I prefer. And I'm with you. This is not really an album that I'm crazy about.
I would say My Eyes is also a great song, by the way. I think it's classic. All right. Okay. So the next album released in the 90s is Black Sabbath Tear, which came out on IRS Records. And this is Tony Martin's third record with the band. Cozy Powell, back with the record. You know, it's very similar to the lineup that did Headless Cross. New bass players come in, bass player of Neil Murray. You know, I really love this record, to be perfectly honest. I'm quite a big fan of Tony Martin and the Tony Martin era. Matter of fact, I've already pre-ordered the Anna Domine, whatever it's called, box set with vinyl. I can't wait for that. It's the only Black Sabbath I don't have on vinyl is those Tony Martin albums. And I think this record is great. It is a departure of sound. Anna Monday is maybe my favorite Tony Martin era song. The Sabbath Stones is great. The Lawmaker is a great up-tempo track. Heaven in Black is great. Feels Good to Me is a great single. I know the band doesn't like it very much, but it's to me the sequel of No Stranger to Love from Seventh Star, which I think is a great song. I just love everything about it. I love the little mini concept in the middle of it. Valhalla is a great song. I just think there's a lot to love on this record, except maybe the production. Cozy is very, very loud in the mix, and you could tell he was very influenced. What do you think, Martin?
Well, I'm going to disagree with most of that, but I'll start with what I agree with there. I'm not a big Cozy fan. I don't like his style very much. He is really loud in the mix, and I think the rest of the mix is also kind of boomy and loud and oppressive, and it's kind of an ear-fatiguing album that way. I find it's a little too self-serious. The whole Tony Martin era, I'm a big fan of the Eternal Idol, but then the rest I'm not a big fan of too much. I just feel it's a little bit too much chasing the spooky, you know, mystical Dio sort of direction. So I've never been too serious a fan. I don't know. Tony sounds like he's searching for riffs. I mean, it does have an epic feel to it. And I do love the cover art. Very cool as well. There's my signed copy by Tony.
Oh, there. Nice.
But cool. Yeah, I'm not going to rate this one too particularly high.
Wow. What do you think, Josh?
I mildly enjoy this one. It's not near the top of my listing, but I do enjoy it. The Odin's Core into Valhalla, that's gold to me. I love that transition. You know, I'm kind of more on Dan's spectrum, but I do enjoy Tony Martin's voice a lot. I really enjoy listening to him. Tony Iommi, again, the production, this whole era of Black Sabbath production is an issue, right? I mean, and that's part of this whole remix that we're getting with this new box set is that something they've wanted to correct for years. So, no, I enjoy this album, and, you know, I thought it was another chapter in the book for me. Anything Tony Iommi is a part of, Tony's Tony, and I can find a way to enjoy it one way or another.
I would have to say, Martin, you bring up an interesting point saying Eternal Idol is your favorite Tony Martin record, since that's the one he actually didn't contribute writing-wise. I mean, it was written mostly by Ray Gillen and Bob Daisley. So it's interesting. I agree. Tony Martin, especially on Headless Cross, tries to do that evil, spooky, you know, Black Sabbath. What I would almost consider, it's almost absurd. It's like so over the top. And I kind of see your point there for sure.
Yeah. I agree with that.
So, All right. Next up we have No More Tears by Ozzy Osbourne. You know, I think everybody who's watching this show, hey, oh, that's awesome. You are definitely showing me up there, Martin. I love it.
Ozzy and Zach.
Ozzy and Zach. That's so very incredible. Cool. I would have to say, we don't have to say much about this show. I'm at this album. We've even done a deep dive on it. This is an all-time classic. This is Ozzy's second most popular record by sales. Behind Blizzard of Oz, you know, I Don't Want to Change the World won a Grammy. Everybody knows the hits off it. Everybody knows Mama, I'm Coming Home, Mr. Crowley, No More Tears, Road to Nowhere. This album is just very poppy for Ozzy. I think this is his most poppy record. I think vocally he is on target and sounds just absolutely incredible. Dwayne Barron and John Purdell does an amazing job of capturing Ozzy's voice here. Josh, why don't you go? What do you think?
Yeah, extremely slick production. This was the album that, while Ozzy never went away, I always felt like No More Tears was the album that cemented his career, right? Like, he never went away, but when No More Tears came out and was just chucked full of singles and pop singles and pop hits, and Zakk Wylde cemented his legacy also, because it was the second album with him, and he really cemented the I'm a guitar icon. You know, Road to Nowhere, some of those leads are so beautiful and so tasteful. No More Tears is an absolute epic. It's clearly one of Ozzy's greatest albums of all time, and obviously we love it.
It's actually such a departure from No Rest for the Wicked. You know, if you really 100%. Think about it, you know, No Rest for the Wicked is much heavier. It's more riff driven, even though there's a lot of great riffs, but you know, ballads.
No real ballads. Hero to an extent, but
yeah, yeah. This one's got three, right? Yeah. Absolutely. What's your thoughts, Martin?
Yeah, I'm going to have this pretty high on my rankings, but I really don't like a lot of these albums in today's show very much, right? So I have complaints about it as well, because I would put every one of the 80s albums ahead of it. At this point, I'm really starting to feel the corporate vibe, right? I'm really starting to feel like we got to have the ballads, the massive production. It just feels like they're losing... They're losing that we're a gang of pirates sort of feel to the band. It's starting to feel a little boardroomy.
Right.
But, you know, we know No More Tears is an absolute classic. I actually, he gets away with the ballads by having good ballads.
He has great ballads.
They are much better than Aerosmith 100%. Ballads. Put it
that way. Oh, not even close.
Or Cheap Trick or Bon Jovi, God forbid. I hate Bon Jovi. But, you know, and I think Mr. Tinker Train is really cool. Awesome. I Don't Want to Change the World is really cool. Massive guitar sound. I don't dislike the production, but it is big corporate production.
It's very slick.
It's not the kind has like dated, horrible, hard to listen to drums or anything like that. It's just very slick. You're right. But it does feel it is getting a little boardroomy. And it bothers me. I like Zombie Stomp a lot as well. I don't like Hellraiser. So yeah, it's up and down a little bit. Don't like Desire very much either. So no, it's definitely my four favorite by far are the first, the second, Bark at the Moon. I've even called my favorite Ozzy album.
Yep,
and I really have a soft spot for No Rest for the Wicked. There's a lot of people that don't
you
like
and
that
Dan album. Drago have like the Pretty exact much. Same opinion on all this stuff. Like you just literally Dan could have said what you said verbatim. It's,
I love Don't Rest, like, No Rest for the Wicked. I think it's just a badass album, and it's not hair metal at all. I love the album cover even. Nope. But to me it goes Bark, Diary, debut, Blizzard, and then No Rest for the Wicked.
It's damn close. I mean, I put Blizzard over Bark, but that's almost my order too, Martin, which is awesome. Yeah, I think No Rest for the Wicked is considerably better than No More Tears. And I know that's kind of not popular to say because, you know, it's just, you know, not as popular of a record. But I agree. I think Zach's guitar tone is even better on No Rest for the Wicked. It's absolutely incredible. And here's the thing that I want to bring out.
No Rest for the Wicked never lets up.
Yeah, it never lets up. It is just a punch to the face. I think this is the last record that Ozzy wrote with the guys as a band, you know, like, you know, I've been in bands, Josh has been in bands, you know, there's something about everybody coming together and writing in a room together instead of passing files and all this, or bringing in outside songwriters. To me, this is the last record where they kind of got in a room to start pounding out stuff and material. And you could tell this is the end of that era because they are starting to bring in Duane Barron and John Purdell co-write No More Tears. So you could tell they are starting to bring in a little bit more outside where it's not just all the band. And No Rest for the Wicked is really the last full band record. I think it's spot on point.
Yeah, it's true. As I look at the songwriting credits, I mean, who knows how true these are, but I mean, literally it's kind of Lemmy, which is very cool.
Yeah,
to bring in, and then the rest of it is the band, but they sure sound corporate.
It sounds
like there's. I would suspect there is some outside songwriting going on in there.
In this one,
I would think so. It really does sound like it. And then you just like buy it off and say we're not putting your name on it, right?
Well, that's what they did with Jake on Bark at the Moon, and everybody's all up in arms about it. But that's what they did with Jake and Bob. You know, it was under Bob's advice to tell Jake, why don't you take a buyout? And not because they might screw you over royalties. And then, but most people don't understand that that's how the business works. And then when Ultimate Sin came, Jake said, I'm not taking that deal. I want my name on the record. And, you know, he wanted his residuals. But it's a great point. I think with Ozzy, though, everybody seems to come out with Ozzy. I think something would have come out if there were ghostwriters on this record.
Right.
But, you know, I think Duane Barron and John Purdell really did a big part of massaging the sound of that record.
That's a great point, Dan, because that's the other way, right? I mean, these guys might have wrote the songs, but those producers, they're saying, do this, do the chorus twice, do it one last time.
Exactly.
Know, give me another verse, give me a different break, let's change the key, all that stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, next up we have the return of the mighty Ronnie James Dio to Black Sabbath with one of the worst album covers in history, and this is Dehumanizer. You know, this was a big deal because Dio was out of the band for 10 years. Coincidentally, you know, Dio didn't want to bring Vinny Appice in. He wanted to bring Simon, what's his last name?
Was the drummer Cozy Powell part of it?
He was. Originally, Simon Wright was going
to be. Oh, Simon? Okay.
Yeah, he was on Lock Up the Wolves. And then they brought in Cozy Powell, who broke his hip riding a horse. And then they had to finally bring in Vinny Appice. Very heavy. This is another album I think is very spotty. The highs are incredibly high on this record. You know, you have songs like Computer God, Time Machine. I think After All the Dead is one of my favorite Dio era Black Sabbath songs. Same with I think I is great. Then you got like Sins of the Father, which is pretty good. But then you got songs like Letters from Earth and Master of Insanity. Those songs are just pretty bad, to be honest. And speaking a little bit about what we were just talking about, Master of Insanity was really written by Jimmy Bell, which was part of the Geezer band, Geezer Butler Project band. And they brought that song in from his album. He never got credited. He never got paid, nothing on it. But that song actually was a Geezer Butler song. And Jimmy wrote the music for it, not Tony. So Martin, what's your first thought on this record?
Well, I'm going to be rating this one quite high, but I even have complaints about this one. It is not nearly a 10 out of 10 for me. I mean, this I'll give you a spoiler alert. I'm going to be having this number one.
Yeah, I figured.
It's a 7.5 or 8 out of 10 for me. My latest podcast episode, which is going up on Tuesday, is called Albums That Don't Deserve the Love, right? And it's really about albums that we try super, super hard to like because we love the narrative. We love the story. So the story of Dehumanizer, having the exact Mob Rules band back together and stuff, is amazing, right? But I think most people were pretty disappointed with this. I love to death TV Crimes, Master of Insanity, and especially Time Machine. I think Time Machine's amazing. So again, this is just a part of the Dio narrative of the slow music, right? It's like this could be a Dio album.
It could be.
It could be Strange Highways or Lock Up the Wolves. It's the same kind of thing. So too much slow stuff. But the main problem with it is it's got this evolved, different from the old Mac recordings of Queen and Billy Squire. But it's got that slappy Mac sound on the drums. Oh. And then other than that, it's kind of like a distorted, pretty heavy album. So it's an interesting production that you know, you're semi-complaining about it the same way we complained about Born Again. So the production bothers people. But yeah, so the production's a little weird, and I don't like how many slow songs there are on it again. So yeah, it's weird. It's artistically admirable that they did something so strange and so non-commercial, and just like, this is who we are in 1992, right?
Right.
But that doesn't make for a thoroughly, you know, pleasant listening experience either.
Yeah. I do think I is one of the greatest songs in the Dio era, too. I is a fantastic song. And I just got to say before you go, Josh, Born Again is by far the superior record. But go ahead.
I is my favorite song on this album. Computer God, I like. There's some sections of that song that I love so much. Then other sections I'm in and out with. But I agree with Dan's statement that really is just hit and miss. You know, Sins of the Father, I, Computer God, TV Crimes, I love those tracks, but then some of the others I just don't really care for at all. So it's very hit and miss with me. But that said, throughout time, it is the album I've revisited often, and that for the most part I do enjoy it.
Have you heard the Geezer version of Master of Insanity, Martin?
I have not. That was actually news to me. I've never heard that. I'd have to check that out.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I off the top of my head, I don't remember either.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but it was originally a Geezer Butler band project. He had formed a band with Jimmy Bell in the 80s, late 80s, and they just took that song. He actually had a song called Computer God as well but they only took the title. It's not the same song. Okay. It's pretty interesting.
And of course, Time Machine was on Wayne's World, which was always fun. You know,
different versions,
you
know, right? Kind of like Mob.
Same story. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Interesting. Great point, Josh. All right. So next up, to cement Martin's point home, we have the incredibly heavy Strange Highways. I think here Dio is trying to take what they did on Dehumanizer and just continue that exact sound. Now, I think this record is pretty incredible. I think they caught lightning in a bottle with this. Jimmy Bain is no longer in the band, and they bring in Dawkins, Jeff Pilson, to play bass. Vinny Appice is back, and they bring in a new guitar player named Tracy G, who has a really, really heavy, unique sound. There's not many guitar players like Tracy G. I think he was in World War III, if I'm not mistaken. Excellent record. I think Jesus, Mary, and the Holy Ghost is a top five Dio track of his solo career. Firehead is awesome. Evolution is great. Shout out to Ryan here. Give Her the Gun is a great song. I think this is they captured lightning in a bottle in this record. This one will be actually mid, but it's just because I like how many of the other albums there are. But I think this is a fantastic record. I was in love with this record when it came out. Incredible. What do you think, Martin?
Yeah, I really like it too. I think it's got the least amount of slow of all the albums I complain about of Dio having slow stuff, but I think they do slow really well here because they've got a really interesting drummer in Vinny Appice who really knows what to do with slow. He's really good with his fills, his snare and cymbal combinations and bass drum, blah, blah, blah. He makes the slow stuff interesting. I think the production is crushing. It's really good on it. Yeah. Just really good songs. The opening track is so impressive with the way it stops and starts. So it's funny when you have confidence in an artist. And you're following them and you're liking what they're doing and you've bought into the concept, you're cheering the songs along and you're liable to raise them a point or two rather than knock them down a point or two. And with this record, starting from that really cool album cover all the way down, it was like, yeah, I'm on board with this. Yeah. So it's one of the ones I'm most on board with. And it's gonna be high in my ranking.
Josh?
Interesting. So like I said, I didn't know this album very well, and our friend Ryan, who's Kevin Martin out here sometimes, he's like, oh, I can't wait for you to listen to Strange Highways. And I got to be honest, it didn't really take me initially. I've listened to it through three times in the past few days. It's okay. Jesus, Mary, and the Holy Ghost, Firehead, those are definitely bangers. I like that. But hearing the both of you speak about it, I'm going to listen more to this record in the upcoming week and try to get to know it even better because it is heavier. It is a little more up-tempo. I agree with all that. It didn't grab me the way I hoped it would. It's not high on my list, but this episode's inspiring me. I'm going to give this one a lot more of an opportunity than the initial thought, because initially I was kind of like, this is another Dio record that just didn't really grab me, but maybe it's going to take a few listens. So I'm anxious to get more into this one.
So the interesting thing about this record too, is this is my biggest complaint about Dio solo. Cause I think his first two records, Holy Diver and Last in the Line, are all time classics. Right. I mean, everybody agrees with that. I think every album after that, it's so spotty, like three or four songs are great. Four songs are terrible. And maybe three or four. Okay. And I think that goes all the way through all the way through Master of the Moon. Magic is that way. Killing the Dragons that way. You know, I think Strange Highways is one of the rare consistent records all the way through. I don't think there's a bad song on this record. It's very, very solid.
Okay.
All right. Up next.
I've got to listen more. No question.
Is the amazing Cross Purposes by Black Sabbath. Now I'm going to give away. This is one of my all time favorite records. My favorite Tony Martin era record. And I absolutely love the welcoming of Geezer Butler back in the band. They use ex-Rainbow drummer Bobby Randinelli, who actually leaves towards the end. So I wonder if maybe you know this, Martin, why Cozy wasn't on this particular record, why they chose Bobby over Cozy. Do you know that?
Can't remember. No.
Was it still dealing with his hip, maybe? That's the only thing I could think of.
Sure.
Because he joined the band right away after the recording was done and toured with them, because Bobby Randinelli went and joined Quiet Riot and did Terrified. So to me, this record has it all. This has everything I want in a Black Sabbath record. Huge riffs, a variety of tempo, great melodies. I think this is the least amount of schlock in the lyrics that Tony Martin has done in his career. It's not this crazy headless cross and Norse mythology. It's just a great record. You know, it has some overly dark, you know, meanings like, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle is very, very dark, but it's dark in a humanistic way, which I think separates this and makes it a little bit more Ozzy era sounding. And I don't know if that's because Geezer's back in the band. I know Geezer writes Virtual Death and adds a lot of music to this, but man, Eyewitness is a banger right up there with Trashed and Neon Nights. Incredible. We all know Evil Eye was composed with Van Halen, but he couldn't get a writing credit because record companies, I'm hoping there's somewhere in the vault with him playing on the record. I just think this is one of Sabbath's best record, and definitely, I'll give a spoiler here, by far their best from the 1990s. What do you think, Martin?
Wow, I'm going to have to listen to it more, because that was a glowing, you know, that's a pretty contrarian view because a lot of people don't like this record.
And I don't know why. Another great song is, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I've got it pretty low as well, but I do love the production on it. I think
way better.
The sound is good. It's a very conservative, easy on the ears sort of production, you know, still, but there's still good guitars. It's spirited. It's lively. I like your description of having the least amount of schlock. I kind of feel that as well. So yeah, there is something, you know, it's such a good bounce back, I think, from Headless Cross, which I never liked.
Me neither.
Yeah. And Tear. So it is a little bit more thoughtful lyrically. So that's good about it as well. I think Bobby Rondinelli does a good job. I've got it pretty low in my rankings, but I think it deserves to be a little higher, especially after that glowing review. I should play it some more.
I mean, Cross of Thorns is like a Children of the Sea style song. It's incredible. I mean, I actually think the production does help a lot. What do you think, Josh?
So I'm definitely more on Dan's train of this one. And Dan and I, we often share a brain anyway, Martin. I apologize. We joke about it all the time. But I love this record. I've always loved this record. It sounds like Black Sabbath to me, whereas a lot of that records from this era sounded like a shell of Black Sabbath, like a caricature of themselves almost a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if Geezer's influence has that much to do with it or not, but this always felt like a true Black Sabbath record right there with, you know, Volume 4, Heaven and Hell, Cross Purposes. Like, it just had that, you know, the right feel to me. Cross of Thorns is one that I absolutely love. Eyewitness. I'm personally sacrilege. I know I kind of like Tony Martin's voice better than Ronnie James Dio's.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
That's sacrilegious.
You know, my wife likes Dio's better than Ozzy. And I like hell that because I just can't have that in my house. But unfortunately, I do. But no, I love this record, man. There's not a bad track on it. The production is better on this one than most of the others in the era. I love this one. And yeah, Martin, I'm going to go listen to Strange Highways. You go jam Cross Purposes when we're finished today. I think you'll. Yeah.
So I like this one a lot. Is Psychophobia, the song, musically, was actually written with Dio during Dehumanizer sessions. It's a great, heavy, crushing riff. The music involved, I mean, the lyrics are nothing like it. Tony Martin rewrote the lyrics and stuff, but there's actually some demos out there of them doing Psychophobia during the Dehumanizer sessions. Something else I forgot to bring up, during Dehumanizer, they had such a hard time making that record that Dio left and got kicked out, and they brought Tony Martin in, and Tony Martin was going to sing that record, and then they kind of wrapped things up. They worked things out with Dio, and he came back in and finished the record. But it was a very hard record to make. I don't think a lot of people realize
that. Yeah.
All right. Up next. Well,
revisionist history kind of has
it. That's why Tony Geezer and Bobby signed one.
Awesome.
Oh, nice.
That is awesome. Josh, I think you bring up a great point. I think that Geezer being on the record is what gives it that Black Sabbath sound, because I agree with you.
The authentic sound.
Yeah. When I listen to Tear, I love it. I just don't feel like I'm listening to a Black Sabbath record. When I put on Cross Purposes, it's like Born Again for me. Born Again is a Black Sabbath record. This sounds like a Black Sabbath record. And I couldn't have said that. It's perfect, man.
Yeah.
Neat.
All right. Next up, I think the most maligned album. I mean, look at how prolific they were. Ozzy still has not released a record. And, you know, Dio did Dehumanizer and Strange Highways. This is the third record Black Sabbath has released since then. And we have Forbidden. And Forbidden is the return of the
Tear lineup. Ozzy retired, man.
Ozzy retired. But we know that Ozzy actually wrote and recorded a shit ton of music during this period. A lot of it's unreleased. But next up is Forbidden. Forbidden is maybe the most maligned record in Black Sabbath's history. The production is awful. And of course we have Ernie C doing the production from Body Count. And we have The Illusion of Power with Ice-T kind of doing a little rap section. which doesn't bother me at all. I think it's actually a pretty solid song. I don't think this record is nearly as bad as what people say it is. It's definitely maybe towards the bottom of the Tony Martin era, but I think a lot of that is to production. I do think there's a lot of really, really great songs. Kiss of Death is absolutely incredible. I love I Won't Cry for You. I think it's an incredible Black Sabbath song. Shaking Up the Chains is great. Can't Get Close Enough is great. Rusty Angels, awesome. There's a lot of good material here. I can't wait to hear the remaster and remix. This is the only album, Josh, that they're actually remixing. Everything else is just remastered. So this one's going to sound much different, and I can't wait for it. I think it's a bad idea that went wrong that could have been great if they would have taken a little bit more time with this record. What do you think, Martin?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it is the sister record to Cross Purposes, so it kind of has the same sort of creative feel to it, that the lyrics are quite good on it. But yeah, the production's not great. I don't really like Illusion of Power very much. Like, all I can think of in my head is that Illusion of Power.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. Sort of, you know, Iron Man kind of vocal melody thing or whatever, right? Get a Grip's got some funny sort of things in it as well that I'm not crazy about. But it's almost like both of these records probably should rise a little bit in estimation out there. And this box set's really going to kind of help as well. But and the production, it's funny. It's not great, but it doesn't have any egregious errors to it. Like it's just sort of there.
Yeah,
right? It's correct, essentially, all over the place. You're just not excited about it, right?
Yeah, it doesn't jump off the speakers.
Kind of the thing, yeah. So, yeah, and definitely a maligned record. And I think this one's kind of maligned as well because of the cartoony cover art. It almost feels like it's great. Got, you know, it got a little bit of the, you know, the Anthrax sort of thing.
That yeah.
State of Euphoria, right? By doing that. And just the cover art being really just totally spooky and cartoony. So it's funny, those things actually make a difference, right? And then Cross Purposes has that very dated 90s thing, and of course that was used for Send Me an Angel as well, that by Scorpions. Dang. That image, right?
Yep, I was gonna make that thank you for bringing that up. I forgot.
I'm gonna have it pretty low.
I agree totally with what Martin just said. The entire package for Forbidden kind of makes it more maligned. Like you said, I think you stated that perfectly. The album art, just all of it. The production is just, it is what it is. But there is great songs in here. I'm with Martin, The Illusion of Power.
Yeah.
I'm just not a fan.
I just don't hate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Ice-T doesn't bother me. It's just the track in general. I'm just not a fan. Like you said, Dan, I Won't Cry for You. Definitely a standout track. Listen to that closer again. The guitar solo, it sounds just like Gypsy from Technical Ecstasy. It's spot on.
Okay.
Between the solo and the rhythm right there.
All right.
Go listen again. You will hear Gypsy 100%.
Sorry, which song is that again, Josh?
That is I Won't Cry for You.
I got to hear that, man. That's hilarious.
During the guitar solo. Yeah, it's Gypsy up and
down. Could be the same chord progression. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, all in all, though, I enjoy this album more than most people do. I'm really good about, I guess because I play in a shitty band that has like shit ass production, I can put production aside. It doesn't ruin it for me if an album has questionable production. Some people are audiophiles and they just can't stand all that snares too loud or whatever. I'm not someone that that's ever really been an issue. I can put that aside. So I really enjoy this record. I enjoy it more than some of the others we discussed on this today. So yeah, I like this one.
You like Kiss of Death a lot too. I remember we talked about that.
Yes.
The last
I do like that one a whole lot. Yeah.
I think that's such a secret in the Black Sabbath catalog. It is an excellent track. And Tony Martin has great melodies. It's a great riff. I love that song. Absolutely excellent. All right. Up next, we have Ozzy Returns with Osmosis. This album is absolutely huge. It came out in the 95, which was a very, very difficult time for heavy metal. Just got to show a shout out. I'm even wearing the shirt today. This had a bunch of hits.
Perry Mason. J.P. Lee.
Perry Mason, I Just Want You. See You on the Other Side.
I got Tank going here.
I am Tank fan, Martin. Huge. Absolutely huge. So we can have a conversation about Tank for sure when we're done. One of my favorites, Algie Ward, is another one of my gods, man.
There's my Ozzy and Zach sign there. Ozzy's very shaky at that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Later in
person. Yeah.
Well, he had a grand mal seizure in the mid early 90s. And I think after that, I think he was never the same. And they kind of kept that hidden and under wraps. And that's when he started having speech problems and really got shaky, was after that seizure.
Now that I remember, this is signed in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And then the only other time I met him in person was the Black Sabbath reunion thing in 99. So this was signed actually earlier, because I didn't
take
any stuff to that one. So yeah, fun.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So we talked about the show. The very first episode we ever did was an Osmosis deep dive. This album is very special to Josh and I. I don't know what else we can really say about it, because we've talked about it ad nauseum on the show. This is one of my all-time favorite records by anybody walking the planet. I think this record is brilliant, and you would not be surprised where this ranks on my list this week. What do you got, Martin?
I'm going to have it kind of in the middle. The funny thing about this album is, again, the weird thing with Aussie ballads is, like, you're not sure if you love them, like them, or dislike them. You certainly don't just dislike them, like you don't buy into Aerosmith ballads, right? So I think of things like Old LA Tonight. Pretty much, I'm very on board with it. See You on the Other Side, totally on board with it. I Just Want You, definitely on board with it.
Amazing.
So it's a funny thing where they're feeling like, they're definitely feeling like Hollywood songs, right? But they also remind me a little bit of what you love about Guns N' Roses at the same time. They just have this sort of epic Guns N' Roses sort of vibe, sophisticated chord changes, a lot of work went into it. They're not just straight maudlin, Mary Had a Little Lamb, ballad chord changes. Yeah. So it's like they pour a lot of work into them. But a lot of the heavy ones I'm not hugely on board with. My Jekyll Doesn't Hide, I definitely really like. I love Perry Mason as well.
Yeah.
This has a huge, massive, same sort of like absolutely massive sort of grungy sound. And this is, you know, the whole point of saying, when they said, you know, people would conjecture, why is Ozzy doing so well in the 90s? It's like, well, he does have a little bit of that really downtuned, slow, grungy sound. So it's like, maybe he's influenced by Ronnie James Dio for all we know, right? But no, I mean, more influenced by Alice in Chains, I think.
Yeah.
More
than anything, well, they brought in Michael Beinhorn or Beanhorn. We always get that wrong on the show, who had just come off of doing Soundgarden. So I think that was exactly what happened. Yeah.
And then we know famously Ozzy, all he complains about this album because he's made to sing too high and stuff like that.
Well, this is pre-autotune, right? So, I mean, this is maybe his best sounding record since Sabotage vocally. He is hitting notes on this record that are just unreal. When people say Ozzy can't sing, this is the album I always bring him to and say, listen to how amazing he sounds on this record. Are you not a fan of Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah, I'm on board with that one. The one I don't like is Ghost Behind My Eyes, because anytime I hear that watery, psychedelic little guitar thing, that drives me crazy, because every hair metal band had those, right? Yeah. They're all going back to their Beatles Norwegian Wood thing, right? Everybody's got to do one of those, right?
He wrote that with Mark Hudson, what's the other guy's name, Josh? John, I'm drawing a mind
blank. Steve Dudas.
Yeah, Steve Dudas. Thank you. Desire. I'm sorry, Denial. He wrote those two records with Steve Dudas and Mark Hudson for a record called Ozzyland, which has been released in part called the Osmosis Demos, but most of that record is unreleased actually still. So it actually, you know, Ozzy's a big Beatle fan, and I think you're spot on about the ballads. You know what? I'm going to open your mind to this theory here. I think that's what Ozzy wants to do. And I think that it comes across very authentic, because like Old LA Tonight is basically him doing his heroes and trying to be John Lennon. And I think that's when he's at, shockingly, his most comfortable. And I wish he would do more of it, to be honest, because I think he just sounds incredible.
Yeah. Great point.
Yeah.
Excellent. Go ahead, Josh.
No, I was saying, I agree. I think he's very comfortable with the ballads. I think that's really more his wheelhouse. That's, like you said, authentic is a good way of putting it, because that's kind of what he wants to do a lot of the times. So I think he would prefer to do that, you know, than not. So yeah, agreed.
This is kind of a mishmash of an album, right? We got songs written with the band, Zakk Wylde and Geezer. Geezer's back on this record. Then we have songs from the Ozzyland record, Denial, Ghost Behind My Eyes. Then we have a song from the X-Ray Sessions, My Little Man, with Steve Vai. So, you know, he was writing with so many different people. Matter of fact, one of the B-sides, was written with Tommy Shaw and Jack Blades, called The Whole World Is Falling Down. It's an unreleased track called Voodoo Dancer that we have that was released on a single, also written with Tommy Shaw and Jack Blades. So this was the first time that Ozzy really went out. Jim Vellance wrote I Just Want You. So it's like he wrote with all of these different people, and Michael Beinhorn had a real tough time, I'd imagine, trying to make it sound cohesive because there's so many outside writers on this record by this point. And they recorded like 18 or 19 songs. So 8 or 9 of them just never been released still.
And your eyes just glaze over when you hear all that list, because it's just, that's what every one of these big corporate Hollywood albums did, right? So it just does not feel like a band at all.
It doesn't. This is definitely the first one for me that it does not feel like a band. It doesn't hinder it for me. This is, to me, the apex of that. I think everything after this is not as good, I'll be perfectly honest. But to me, I think they still caught magic in a bottle with Osmosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And you guys mentioned earlier that Ozzy was pushed so heavily on production, and he references that often in interviews, that he did not enjoy the process of recording Osmosis, but we can all agree that Michael Beinhorn got it out of him, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean,
he sounds amazing on this record.
Yeah, amazing. All right, the last record we're going to be discussing, the last record, which came out in 96, so it's crazy to me, 97, 98, and 99, there was nothing released by these bands. I mean, Forbidden was so poorly received, it basically killed the career of Black Sabbath until... Ozzy rejoined. Well, Dio, no, until Ozzy rejoined, actually. All right, so last up, we have Dio's Angry Machines. So this is basically a continuation of Strange Highways. It has the exact same lineup in it. But to me personally, this one doesn't even come close to creating that magic they found with Strange Highways. Matter of fact, I think this album is pretty abysmal. I can't even make it through. It is probably Dio's worst record of his career. I just don't like this record at all. And I don't know how they went from Strange Highways to Angry Machines, but this album is quite frankly terrible. And I hate to be so harsh on it, but there's just nothing I like about it. The production is just fine, but it's so sloggy and so slow. And there's just nothing I really like about this record. What do you think, Martin?
I'm going to disagree with you. I think I like this quite a bit.
Wow.
What bothers me about this record, I know it's actually a fairly contrarian point of view, because this kind of killed Dio's career.
It
killed Tracy G being in the band because there was such a backlash against him. But I've always had a hard time. I think a lot of people don't like this record because he's down to Mayhem Records now. It's got, the back cover photo is just the three guys. It's like overexposed. The song titles are all just in caps. There's only 10 songs on it. But I still think Vinny does a good job with making slow interesting. As I go through it, there's a dissonance to it, but it's not particularly slow. It's got some proggy sort of weird things that I definitely, Dan, I understand why it rubs people the wrong way, but I feel like he's being creative. Dying in America's groovy and mid-paced sort of thing. Don't Tell the Kids is fast, but it's not the best version of fast. But Hunter of the Heart is kind of a good way of doing slow on here. The lyrics are very societal and bleak. That bothers a lot of people. But I'm going to have it pretty high on my list. I think this is one of the more underrated ones. And the production, again, the production is kind of, what would you say? I mean, it's definitely not as good or as detailed, and it doesn't sound like they spent as much money on it as Strange Highways. But it still is heavy and bold, but it's heavy and bold and raw. It seems to be missing some of the detailing, right? But I'm gonna have it pretty high on my list. But like I say, man, going through this exercise, if I'm rating Dehumanizer as my top album at a 7.5. I'm not a big fan of most of these albums.
That's crazy. I would say I'm not a big fan of Dio's lyrics. And I know that's probably maybe not a very popular, but I just think Geezer is way better lyricist. It's not even close, but I think this is one of those records. Geezer's lyrics just drive me crazy. Double Monday. And again, another kid song. And I don't know. I just think it becomes too repetitive. I feel like they're trying on this record. Where to me, Strange Highways was very natural. Like these guys got together with Jeff Pilson and was like, wow, that was a great record. To me, Angry Machines is, well, let's try to duplicate what we did on. And you just never, whenever you try, it just never works. And that's kind of my synopsis of this record.
Yeah, you're right. It does feel a little bit like pulling teeth, and it is very bleak. Yeah. And Strange Highways just has sort of a definite creative vibe. I mean, it'd be interesting to rank all these about how artistic we think they all are.
Yeah. Too, right? And I think that's another issue because
different ranking, right?
You know? Right. And I think Strange Highways, Dio's return to form, it's his best record for me since Last Online. And I think that was my big, you know, because I bought these the day they came out. I was so disappointed with this record coming off of Strange Highways. It was like, oh my gosh, it's not even close in the same realm. What do you got, Josh?
I'm actually right in between the two of you. I actually got this one ranked over Strange Highways. I apologize to you and Ryan. I will listen to Strange Highways more and see what I'm missing. But that said, I'm not crazy about this one either. The opening track, Institutional Man, listen to that. 21st Century Schizoid Man. It's like,
yeah,
like exactly the same verse. It's dead on. I was just like, wow, you know. But that said, there was a few in here that I liked, you know, for the most part. Not my favorite Dio record by any means, but I didn't think it was. I had a feeling this was the one you weren't very crazy about. But I kind of got on with this one quicker than I did with Strange Highways. So, yeah, wow, I'm crazy. Cool with it.
So, all right. So that wraps up all nine records. So what we're going to do now is we're going to do a quick walk around the room. We'll start with Martin, and we'll go to Josh, and then we'll go to me, and we'll rank our records. So, Martin, after this excellent discussion, before we get going, are you cemented with what you wrote down before you came on here, or is there wiggle room? Did either of you guys move anything?
God. Yeah, I am going to move one. Yeah, Dan, you've awesome. Convinced me of something. I'm going to make one switch here.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm going to make a switch. Because my, you know, like that thing, your heart is telling you one thing, your head's telling you another thing. It's like, well, you've convinced me of Strange Highways a little bit more to move it with Angry Machine. So you'll hear that.
Awesome. In this I love
ranking.
It.
So my ranking is number 9 at the very bottom, Black Sabbatier. Then I'm going to go number 8, Lock Up the Wolves. Then I'm going to go Black Sabbath Forbidden. Then I'm going to go Black Sabbath Cross Purposes. So now all my Sabbaths are done by the first 3 out of the 9. Then I'm going to go Osmosis, number 5.
Okay.
Then I'm going to go No More Tears, number 4. And then I'm going to go Angry Machines, Dio. And then I'm going to go Strange Highways, Dio. Oh, I didn't finish my Sabbath. Yeah. My number 1 is Dehumanizer.
Well, I knew what you meant. You meant Tony Martin Sabbath. Yeah.
Yeah, you see him as a group. It's kind of a mix with Sabbath getting the short end of the stick, Ozzy going right in the middle, and then Dio coming on strong at the end, and then Dehumanizer winning, which is also Dio, right? So
yeah for sure. Yeah. It's interesting. You're such a big Dehumanizer fan. It's a very spotty record for me, but it's a great list, man. I was in love with it in the early 90s, and I just don't think it's aged as well as some of the other records has for me. Matter of fact, I think the Tony Martin records has aged better for me personally.
Yeah, similar for me, Dan.
Yeah. All right, Josh.
Let's do a second rating when we're done here and see if we can rate them on how much artistic integrity is in each of these albums.
Okay.
That'd be interesting.
Okay. So number 9 for me is Strange Highways. Like I said, I will give it more of a listen. I'm going to give it a chance. But that is number 9. Number 8, I am going with Angry Machines. Number 7 is Lock Up the Wolves. Sorry, Dio. I this doesn't
click with me. Josh is not a Dio fan.
The Tony Iommi influence helps the Sabbath tracks a ton for me. I am a guitar player. Tony Iommi is a god, and that definitely helps. So number 6, I have Tear. Number 5 is Forbidden. Number 4, I have, and 4 and 3 for me was very close, but I went Cross Purposes at 4. And at 3, I have Dehumanizer. And anyone that listens to the show knows already, No More Tears is number 2, and number 1 is Osmosis. Dan and I cut our teeth with this podcast with Osmosis because it meant so much to both of us. And it's one that we really connect on. So, yeah, for me, Osmosis is my favorite of the 90s.
Yeah, it's a good list. You know, I'm going to, before I do my list real quick, I want to say Tony Iommi is really the difference maker. As much as I love Strange Highways and stuff, I just can't in my heart not put Tony Iommi over some of the stuff. So my number 9 is Dio Angry Machines. There's a shocker. My number 8 is Dio Lock Up the Wolves. I also do not think it's a very strong record. My number 7 is Black Sabbath Forbidden, my first Tony Martin. My number 6 is Dio Strange Highways. I love the record, but I think the top 5 are all pretty strong for me. My number 5 is Black Sabbath Dehumanizer. So all of my Dio is done by then. And I'm a pretty big fan of some of the Tony Martin stuff. Starting with number four, I have Black Sabbath Tear. Number three, Black Sabbath Cross Purposes. And then, of course, number two, Ozzy, No More Tears. And number one, of course, is Ozzy, Osmosis, which would be neck and neck for me, Martin, with No Rest for the Wicked. That would be right there. You know, I like them both better than Ultimate Sin, to be honest, but those two right there would be neck and neck for my third, fourth and fifth Ozzy spots. I love both of those records very much. But very interesting.
Let's rate them on creative integrity now, on art. All right. On how artful they are. So, I mean, I would say the least creative integrity here would be the two Ozzy Osbourne albums, both of them.
Really?
Because they're just very corporate, right? But at the same time, I don't know which is worse. Tony probably doing records just for the money. It's time to do a Sabbath album. Here's my riffs. Let's put together a band. So I almost feel like Forbidden and Cross Purposes. So I'm gonna knock these off as I say them. So I'm gonna go there. I really do feel that the guy who means the most, who cares the most about the record making here and wants to make art is Ronnie, generally speaking. More than Tony and more than Ozzy, right? So I would say I like your, you know, ideas about Angry Machines feeling like maybe we forced these songs, they were hard to do. So I would say I would put Angry Machines probably next. Then I would put Lock Up the Wolves. Tear is a funny one. So yeah, Tear's got to be low too. I feel like out of this discussion, you guys have convinced me a lot. And I knew I was feeling that way anyways. But I still think that the two albums that have the most artistic integrity are probably Strange Highways and Dehumanizer.
I agree with one of those. I have an argument against Dehumanizer a little bit, but I'll do it on my list. But I think I like your idea about Dio being the most, having the most integrity. Now, when we say creative, it's tough because I don't think we can't judge this on creative ability because I don't like Dio's lyrics very well. So he would rank low for me creatively from that perspective. But when we're talking artistic integrity, you know, that's a little bit different.
Let me just make one more point about Dehumanizer. So I think what's interesting about Dehumanizer is there was actually a lot at stake, right? So with Dio, Dio's a small artist. It's like no one cares what he's doing anymore, kind of thing, right? And Sabbath a little bit at times. But with this one, all eyes were on them, and they do, and they go and make a weird record. So that's kind of commendable, I think.
So for me, the argument against Dehumanizer is they had to use a song from Geezer Butler's old band, which is telling me that they were struggling coming up with ideas. They kicked Dio out and brought Tony Martin in. They kicked out Cozy Powell and Simon Wright and brought Vinnie Appice in. I feel like there was just so much tension and mayhem going on.
Dirty laundry, bad vibes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That I think if you talk to most artists, you know, me included, I've recorded dozens of records over my life. Is the albums you remember the most fondly are the ones that you enjoyed making the most. And I can't believe they enjoyed making that record. I just can't in my heart. It was just so much. I think Strange Highways, I won't give a list, Martin. I love this idea though. I think Angry Machines is at the bottom of that list too, because I think it's just a replica of Strange Highways. And I think at least with No More Tears and Osmosis, there's totally different records. And I think Ozzy is at least trying to stay up with the times. I look at that as a positive. I know maybe artistic integrity isn't there, but I think the fact that Ozzy wrote with so many different writers and they were able to make it sound cohesive was good. But I think No More Tears would probably be at the top of my list because I know it's very corporate, but it's the last album Ozzy really wrote with a band. Or Strange Highways. I think Strange Highways might be on that list because you can feel the magic listening to that record. Like four guys getting back together, bringing in Tracy G. And if you've been in bands like Josh and I have over the years, do you play, Martin? I forgot to ask that.
Yeah, I was a drummer in the 80s, very briefly. We had one little bar band. That's about it. So,
but when you bring in a new person in a band, it gives you, right, Josh? It gives you that initial
little energy.
And that energy. And I think that's on Strange Highways with Tracy G. I think, and Vinny back in the band. Because if you remember right, Vinny's not on Lock Up the Wolves. He left the record because he didn't like the fact that Jimmy Bain was not there. And I think with Vinny coming back in and Tracy G just gave them such a high energy. And I know it was fifth or sixth on my list, but I would probably put Strange Highways at the top of that list for artistic integrity. You could just feel the energy of the band there. And then out of the Sabbath stuff, I kind of feel that with Cross Purposes a little bit too. It sounds like a Black Sabbath record. And I think Geezer probably gave Tony Martin a shot in the ass to write better lyrics, because how do you write lyrics in a band with Geezer Butler as your bass player? Right. Now, Dio has such an ego on him, it probably didn't affect him much, but I'm sure Tony Martin felt that pressure.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
And with artistic integrity, there's something to be said too. You take like Ozzy, it still sounds like Ozzy, but it did sound like a modern Ozzy. So there's something to be said for that also, that you can, you know, roll with the times and progress to a new sound, but not lose the integrity of the old sound. And I think there's something to be said for that. Again, Dio, you know, I agree, but he definitely, Strange Highways, you know, yeah, I agree totally. The Sabbath stuff, minus Cross Purposes, was very much cookie cutter. I think we all can agree with that. There's no doubt. Artistic integrity there is not really
for flowing Cross Purposes.
For all except for Cross Purposes.
Oh,
for
okay.
Forbidden, for Tear. You know, not Dehumanizer. Dehumanizer for me is just, it's a shaky record. I don't know. There's some moments I love it so much. I could be maybe my second or third favorite Dio song with Black Sabbath. It's right there near the top.
Yeah.
But there's other, you know, but yeah, for the most part, I agree with Martin's argument for Ronnie Dio as far as the artistic integrity, that he was definitely trying to explore new venues and grow as an artist. But like I said, I think at the same time, Ozzy does a similar by changing with the time without losing his integrity of what made him who he was. So
yeah. Matter of fact, I saw Dio in the mid-90s open for Priest with Tim Ripper Owen singing. That's how low his career had gotten in the mid-90s.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. I mean, think about that. It was maybe 1,000 people there. It was crazy. You know,
yeah.
And matter of fact, he did all the side one of Heaven and Hell. So he wasn't even, you know, which was kind of cool because Tracy definitely has his own style of playing. So it didn't play all that Vivian. And I think that was another issue they had with Tracy, is he didn't play the Vivian Campbell stuff like Vivian. But Vivian is such a great guitar player, man. You know, and that's not a knock on Tracy. I think he's great. But some people just have a hard time doing covers. I'm one of them. I don't do covers very well. But yeah, I love the artistic part. I do think Dehumanizer was mirrored in a lot of controversy internally. And I think that's why Dio left the band so quick. You know, Forbidden, really, I hear rumors, was written and recorded to get them out of a contract because Ozzy was going to come back at that time. That was the rumor. And that so I think that would be ranked pretty low for me too artistically over the other Black Sabbath records, because I think Tony was just trying to get that done and out so they can get Ozzy back in.
A point I wanted in my notes about Forbidden, there's a song Can't Get Close to You on that, which is like a copy of Quartz Wildfire, which is a copy of Black Sabbath Megalomania, which is
Totally. That Megalomania riff is in there. That's a great call out. Absolutely. Yeah, good song.
For sure.
Well, thank and you Martin, so much.
I was going to say, thank you for getting me out of my comfort zone. I'm an Ozzy historian. Dan's an Ozzy historian. We can tell you anything you want to know. Jack Osborne went on the Osbournes podcast and said, like, no, like, there's guys that go deep, and then there's these guys. He was telling Ozzy and Sharon about us.
That's our tagline.
Which is, like, the ultimate, like, you know, compliment to us. But this episode, which was your idea, got me out of my comfort zone and talking about albums that really I'm not as familiar with and you know, artists and details that I'm not as familiar with. And it's definitely more challenging and fun to do something a little different. So thank you for that. And it also brought another shade to our podcast that we've talked about, you know, we want to do something with Ronnie Dio sometime or something, but we've never done it. And finally, now we're bringing that into our show and broaden the horizons a little bit. So thank you for the topic. We really appreciate it.
Cool. Wicked. Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Please, listeners, please check out Martin's books. He is, again, not to harp on it, but I wouldn't say it if I didn't mean it, the best author when it comes to hard rock and metal. Your newest book's on Van Halen, right, Martin?
Yes, just had one come out called Van Halen at 50. And then 2 days later, 2 days ago, Led Zeppelin, A Visual Biography. So they're both hardcovers, nice. Full color throughout. So those are the one cranking them out right now.
So please, listeners, also do me a favor personally. Harass Martin to write that Ozzy Osbourne album by album book that we all desperately need, because we will sell the shit out of it. I tell you that much, Martin. Yeah,
absolutely. But,
and if you ever need ideas for anything, you know, Josh and I would be happy to help write that book. Cool. But thank you. Listen to Martin's podcasts. You know, History in Five Songs is one of my favorite podcasts. And of course, the brand new Kicked in the Teeth AC/DC podcast. And who isn't a huge AC/DC fan? If you love Ozzy, you love AC/DC. I mean, two of the greatest bands ever. So yep. Martin, this means the world to me. Thank you for your time. You know, we're always welcome on the show. So thank you.
Absolutely. All right,
guys, thanks. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
No, thank you for coming.
I got so into it. Fuck. I'm so sorry, Martin. I was so excited to see you. I forgot to record.
Okay.
Oh, shit. We got to start again. I'm so sorry. That was so good, too. That's on me, guys. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
I'm glad I noticed
that. This happened one time before, and we were almost verbatim.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Josh. No. That's a great
question. I cannot believe you fucking didn't record the first part of the episode. What the fuck?
I know, man. We were 15 minutes in, and I was like, holy shit, I forgot to hit record. And I looked up, and I thought, oh, we're so unprofessional. But Martin was amazing.
We're like Beavis and fucking Butthead on this podcast. I swear. Yeah, for sure. It can't go wrong at will, but then Martin was like, it happened. He said they've lost full episodes before, so it like that shit happens to everyone. But Dan's face, and I could tell you were like, fuck.
I wanted to bury my head in the sand, dude. I was so embarrassed. I was like, I had to cut him off too. I'm like, oh, we didn't hit record. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And then when we redid the intro, you were kind of speeding through it a little bit. I could tell you were kind of like, okay, let's, you know, I don't want to keep this guy all day, which I think he would have stayed here for 3 hours. He didn't seem to be in a rush at all.
Yeah, so if we do seem rushed at the beginning, Josh is right. We had already recorded that part, and we had to re-record it. So, but we did it spot on, dude. I love, you know, we try to keep it as fresh as we did the original. I mean, we even say the same stuff, you know.
Yeah, which is awesome. It's all good.
All right, have a good one.
You too.